Hello and welcome to the Fishing Guide Podcast. I'm your host, Brad Weekman, and we are all about swim baits this week. We're going hot. We're going heavy. We want the biggest. We want the smallest. We want the ones that catch the biggest fish, and we want the ones that, no, we want the ones that catch the biggest
always
fish.
You're always going for big, right?
Kevin Brightwell's with us, and he's with KGB Swim Baits, and dude, this guy could talk all day about fishing. But we're lucky enough, he's going to tell us, he's actually going to tell us how to use some of the swim baits and maybe give us a couple tips on when you're throwing a swim bait to be more productive and catch more fish. So just start with maybe some general knowledge and then break it into a little more specific.
Okay, so general knowledge, everybody thinks swim baits, you know, they're becoming more popular and they think they only catch giant fish, but they don't. They'll catch everything, you know. I've said it before, fish don't have hands, and so they have to feel with their mouth. And if they're curious about it, you get a lot of curious bites. So you'll catch anything from little 10-inch, you know, bass, even on a big bait like what we're showing here. And if you're only listening, then this, we're sitting here looking at a 13-inch over 16-ounce bait, and you'll still catch little 10-inch fish on these, all the way up to hopefully the giants that we're all thinking of and wanting to catch.
Right.
So, they have so much drawing power. It's something new, you know, fairly new. It's getting more and more popular every day, it seems, but it's something the fish haven't really been exposed to a whole lot, and they are reacting to it. I mean, you're even starting to see it in the big tournament trails and stuff like that.
So let's just talk about throwing a 9-10 inch swim bait. Yep. For someone that has never done it before, what do they need to do?
First, have the right gear for that bait. Once you get your right setup, let's say you're out there, we're talking about on the water, what you need to do is you need to break down your water and look at the highest percentage area for a big fish. Right. You don't want to just go down a bank like you normally would with, you know, a crankbait or a jerkbait or worms or something like that.
Right.
You want to focus on the points, literally the points and places where a big fish is likely to be and ambush a big bait.
Right.
Somewhere where you think, oh my God, like look at the juiciest places on that whole entire shoreline or lake, the place where you think, oh my gosh, there's going to be a big fish there, and fish there. Don't waste your time down on structureless shoreline. Go to the places with the biggest structure, the biggest contours, and the biggest breaks or the biggest trees, whatever the biggest structure is in the water, you're likely going to find the biggest fish there too. And so that's where you want to be starting to throw your swim baits.
And a lot of times when they talk about swim baits, they're talking about ones that are the rate of fall. Rate of fall, and how is a person going to know what they're looking at that they need to fish with?
Right. So rate of fall has kind of changed over the years for what people interpreted it as, but what it originally started was how many feet it falls in 10 seconds.
Right.
So if you see a ROF 5, that would mean it falls 5 feet every 10 seconds, and that makes it very predictable on how deep you're getting your bait. So if you just completely pause your bait and don't reel it in, and if you take away some of the factors like monofilament or fluorocarbon, if you take away any added float or sink, that bait by itself will fall 5 feet every 10 seconds. As to where ROF 0 doesn't fall at all. That's a floater. Right. Or an ROF 10 would fall 10 feet every 10 seconds. So it's supposed to be a 10-second count. And that's how fast or slow that bait sinks.
And tell us, why is that important? Why do I need one that sinks fast, or why do I need one that floats?
So for beginners, you for the most part, you do not want a very fast sinking bait because you're likely to get it hung on everything.
Right.
It's going to be falling if you have an ROF 10 or 12, or they go, you know, 16. That bait that's going to be falling very, very quickly, and you're likely to get that bait snagged on the bottom, lose your bait, you're going to be disappointed. An ROF 5 is a sweet spot because that's just kind of a medium range. That's what's considered medium or slow sink. Now, once you get into the big baits, if you go down this rabbit hole, there's going to be people who say a slow sink should be a ROF 2. You know, they get their description of a slow sink is a little bit more refined or in-depth.
Right.
So when they see a ROF 5, they're thinking that that's a fast sink. That's technically, by the book, that's a slow sink.
Right.
An ROF5 is technically a slow sink, and what's good about that is you can work the bait quickly and keep it up just subsurface if you want, or you can slow it down and let it sink down. That's a good moderate rate to be at. Or if you're scared of losing it, go with the floater, and you can always add little suspend strips or lead tape to it to get it to slowly sink. if you're just concerned about breaking it off and you want to get that bait back, go with a floater.
Is a sinking one going to elicit that strike from aggressive fish more?
You know, it can, but 99% of my strikes, I am fishing that bait subsurface. I mean, almost waking it. That's almost 99% of my fish are caught in the top 2 feet of the water. And that's just, even though it's a ROF 5 feet every 10 seconds, I'm retrieving that bait. Plus, I'm using a heavy monofilament line, which is keeping it up a little bit higher. And so most of my strikes are within 2 feet of the surface year round. Yep. Even during the wintertime when everybody's fishing deep, I'm fishing up shallow, and that's where I get my bites. And it doesn't mean shallow on the shore. It just means shallow in the water column. I might be 200 or 300 yards offshore chasing a school of fish, and I'm still fishing this bait, you know, just subsurface.
And so size, we see a lot of different sizes here.
Yes.
Where would you begin?
So,
you know, fishing these.
Right. I have, I'm blessed to be able to have any size I want because I make these, right? So
that's an advantage.
Right. So I have a full array of sizes on deck when I start my day.
Right.
And I always start with the biggest possible that I think is going to work for that day or that particular body of water. For some lakes, that might mean the biggest one I use is a 9-inch, but other lakes that have bigger bait, I'll start with a king, which is an 11-inch bait. Right. And I will work my way down until I get the reaction that I want, which is a bite. If I'm getting followers and seeing fish follow these bait and showing interest, but they're not wanting to eat it, I'll downsize a little bit.
Right.
And then I keep downsizing until I get the strike I want. And sometimes I downsize all the way down to this little guy.
How many inches is that one?
He's about 4.5 inches.
4.5 inches.
Yeah. So a little bit bigger. With the body's about the same size as a big crankbait, but with the tail, you know, it adds a little bit. I always like to start big, and I start slow. I always start slow, and I work through the speed range with each bait as well until I get that reaction. So with the king, I will always start slow, super, super slow, and see what reaction I get. If I get a follower, then I'll speed it up a little bit, see if I can get them excited. And then I'll all the way up to a burn and really erratic. And if I don't catch anything on the king, starting from a slow retrieve all the way to, like, super erratic, then I'll step down in size to the 9-inch bait and do the same thing. Start slow, all the way up to erratic until I get the reaction I want. If I catch a fish, then I know, okay, that's the speed that they want, at least for this time period.
Right.
And that time period can change throughout the day. So I may start slow and be getting bites slow, and 30 minutes later, the fish may have changed gears, and now they want that bait to be erratic. And so it's constantly changing and adjusting. Like, you're not going to land on one pattern that works all day unless you are on a solid, solid pattern that can hold all day.
Right.
It changes, and you have to change with it.
So what are they supposed to do when they start following your bait?
Okay.
When does it become that little, becomes everyone's got this?
Right.
But there's the guy who's catching them. We're going to say you're the one who's catching them because you're,
what's the difference?
You're pretty good at it. So
the difference is once you get fish following your bait,
okay,
and say, let's say you've got 20 guys on this certain shoreline and it's just producing, everybody's throwing the same bait. What's going to make you stand out and catch that fish is being able to read that fish and react to it. So if you're able to visually see the fish following your bait, then sometimes they don't want any, if they're already following, you've done something right.
Right.
Don't change what you're doing. Eventually you're going to have one come up and eat it. But sometimes it does take a little bit of angler input to make that bait have a certain twitch or a certain speed that triggers that reaction bite. So if you are getting followers all day long, and let's say everybody, all those 20 anglers are doing the same thing, but you're the guy who inputs one certain little twitch or a series of twitches, like 1, 2, 3 pause. That 1, 2, 3 pause may be what gets them to eat. And what I mean by 1, 2, 3 is twitching it. Like these baits like to turn left, right, left, right. Well, if you're just doing a steady cadence and then all of a sudden twitch, 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 pause, that may be the series that it takes to get that fish to commit. And that may get all the fish down the shoreline to commit. I've had days where I go out and they want three twitches and a pause.
Really?
I've gone out other days where they wanted one twitch and a pause. Other days where they want, you know, 15 or 20 twitches in a row, and then you got to kill it. And then right when you start again, that's when they would eat. And that bite would be consistent like that throughout the day.
Huh.
So every day you got to find kind of what they want, what's going to trigger them to actually come up and try to eat it. And that's what, if you're an angler that can figure that out and not just do the same steady wind and wait and wait and wait, eventually you're probably going to catch a fish. But if you're intuitive enough to try to figure out what twitch, what certain series of twitches, or what's going to actually trigger that bite. If you're that angler, you're going to catch more fish.
Do you think changing, do you change color patterns of your baits, or are you not? You're not changing much color patterns?
Yeah, to me, I have a bunch of beautiful baits sitting here in front of me.
Right.
And, of course, they speak to me. But when it comes to the fish, you know, they're looking up. A lot of times, if it's right. a sunny day, I don't think they're seeing the color. I think they're seeing the shadow. That's just me. So we offer tons of different colors, and that's for the angler. But when it comes to the true fish, like, I think it makes subtle difference. Like, a pure bone bait is going to stand out more and get, like, a bone-colored bait that's really white. I do feel like that gives you some advantage, but as far as anything else, I really don't feel that paint makes a difference to the fish, but I do feel like it's a major confidence thing for the angler. If you as the angler feel like your color is matching the bait fish, then you're going to have more confidence to stay with that bait and keep throwing it.
Shad spawn. People want to know, shad spawn's happening, and is that not one of the best times to throw one of these?
It can be, and it's also sometimes most difficult because the more bait that's available, you've got to trick that fish to eat your plastic bait than the thousands and thousands of actual real fish there. So two advantages is yours stands out. It's a little bit different, either in shape, size, or color, or how it acts. So it could look like an injured shad that's getting away, and you might have an incredible day where they're going to eat that injured shad that's going away, which it happens to be your bait.
Right.
Or you're going to go out and have the most difficult, frustrating day of your life because you have thousands of fish in a bait ball with, maybe a dozen bass chasing it, and you could be like this all day long, and you can never get them to stray away from the bait ball. So it can be the most rewarding time, or it can be the most, frustrating time.
You talked about doing a little tweaking to these baits, making a difference. Like we were talking like Beaver Lake and a reservoir that gets – a lot of anglers there fishing, and now, of course, you're here, and you've driven all these people to throw swim baits and get these great big rods. Yeah, you've made your bite harder.
Yes.
How, like, let's say I was going out there and I wanted to catch maybe more fish than you. What could I do to tweak this up a little bit?
So different things you can do to, like, let's say here locally anyways, I have kind of killed my own bite. If I didn't advertise or promote these here locally or anything like that, I would still have the same bite I had 5 to 6 years ago. But these fish are getting educated. It's getting more difficult. Even though swim baits are new to most people, these are out there in a lot of boats. So these fish are seeing these baits over and over and over and getting educated on them.
Uh-huh.
So little tiny tweaks, a feathered treble hook might be all it takes to...
On
the back or the front. I like the back. If I do a feathered one, I rarely do feathered. That's just me personally.
Right.
Even though I promote it, I know what other anglers do. I've seen other guys in my shop put feathered hooks on there and they're catching more fish. I just can't, I don't know what it is about. I feel like it's like when you get slime on a hook, you're always going to pull that slime off. Uh-huh. That's what the feather looks like in the water. It looks like slime. So I know it works. It's just something hard for me. But what I will do too, some of the things I do, is put a little spin blade on the hook, the little tiny willow blade. That might be all it takes. And if I'm doing anything to these baits, I'm doing it to the back hook. It creates a little bit of a drag, and you're going to get better performance than if you put on the front hook. On the front hook, if you do anything, it kind of slows down. It messes with the action in the wrong way. So mess with the treble on the back, feather, spin blade, even... Just something different than anyone else is doing.
Right.
Can trigger a bite. If you get a set of silver hooks instead of black hooks, that might be a factor that day. And, sometimes they are very picky, especially in clear water. They come up and they really investigate these baits if they're starting to get educated on them.
Right.
If you go to a lake that's never seen these baits, they're just going to come up and eat them.
Right.
But if these fish are starting to get educated, something as simple as changing the hook size, the hook color, adding a feather, or a little spin blade can make a massive difference. And those fish act like they've never seen the bait before, and they eat it just like they would if it's the first time they've ever seen it.
Let's say a big striper comes up and eats this, and it's not swimming right. It's not swimming like it when it came from you. Can you tune these?
Yes, and I don't recommend for, like... If you're good at tinkering and doing what, you can mess with it and tweak it. Like these baits, you can, these joints, you can tweak them many, many times before that screw. Those screws are solid stainless steel.
Right.
And so you can tweak that bait and twist it a bunch of times until you get it back right. But with me, my customer service and my OCD and all that stuff, I prefer if somebody has a bait that's not swimming right, send it back to me. If I can't fix it, I'll replace it.
Okay.
So that's what I've always recommended. Now, if you are curious, like if you do feel like you can do it yourself, feel free. And if you don't get it right, still send it back. I'll either retune it. And if I can't tune it right, then I'll replace it. I want everybody who's throwing my baits. I mean, they're not cheap. They're expensive. And so if somebody's throwing my baits, I want them to get the optimum performance out of it. And if it's not swimming right, I need to know about it and I can make it right for them.
All right. Well, you brought it up.
Yep.
Give us the price range.
So anywhere from, this one is not introduced yet, but I'm shooting for the $50 to $60 price point on this little guy.
That's right.
That'll be
a good one.
More affordable for a lot of people. They're going to be, you know, mind blown by $50, $60. Oh my gosh. But
right. All
the way up to, like the King. Well,
how about this one? This is
$150 for the Chad, $175 for the 9-inch Legend.
Okay.
The crappies are $225. The King $350, the Pounder we've never sold. That's going to be kind of we'll figure out what we're going to do with the Pounder.
The Pounder hasn't been out very long then?
It's been out for a long time. Just nobody's had it. I've never sold one.
Oh, you've never sold one.
No, they're gifts. So far, the Pounders have only been gifts.
Take that down Lake Fork.
Yeah.
Be a good place.
Need to. Yep. And then I've got some new baits that are going to be coming out. Stuff that's just, you know, hit production, ready for production, just never went into production. So I've got new baits.
Is this going to be one, or is this a one of a kind?
That one, that's a particular one, is a one of a kind that I tinkered with. But they may. I want to expand my production line.
Right.
I need to. You know, we've been very successful at producing shad glides, and so far we've been running a good 3 years on three models. Which is pretty impressive when you really think about it. I mean, three different models and I'm able to stay this busy and still not be able to keep up. But I do want to expand the lineup and offer more than just shad glides. And we are working on that. I've got a lot of stuff in the works coming up.
How many you make in a week? How many baits you think you make in a week?
You know, with the crew I've got right now, 200 baits a week. On average,
a week.
Yeah, that's about the cycle that we've got three different painters, and the cycle that we've kind of landed on is every week we're receiving back from the painters around 200 baits, and sometimes it fluctuates. Sometimes it depends on what bait we're doing. If we run across any issues, you know, these are handmade out of resin, so there might be a week where, you know, we had a lot of bubbles pop up in this resin for some reason, like it's humidity driven, it's temperature driven, all that stuff. So there might be a lot of little tiny air bubbles and that takes more time for us. So there might be a week where we only produce 100 baits.
Wow.
Or there might be a week where we're able to produce 300 or 400 if everything goes really, really smoothly.
Right.
And it's all.
That's still not very many. When you put it in the perspective of how many anglers there are.
Exactly. And that's what. So. You know, in our game, as far as resin handmade baits, I think we're in probably in the top two or three.
Wow.
As far as how many baits we're putting out.
Right.
But it's still nothing in comparison to like what the average angler is probably used to as far as availability. We're not a mass injection molding company.
Yeah.
I've got, you know, a team of four full-time guys, two part-time, and then the painters. You know, we're relatively small in the big scheme of things.
Yep.
But I feel like we're killing it as far as our little niche in the industry.
Okay. Give us one tip.
Yep.
If you could only give us one tip to fishing these big baits, mm-hmm. what would that tip be?
A tip.
Yeah. Tip.
One tip. I'm trying to, there's so many tips I want to give right now.
But you get one.
Okay. Once you hook into that fish, if you're a brand new angler, let's say you go out and you're used to catching and having to play these fish. With big swim baits, you cannot play these fish. It's a big, heavy bait with a lot of leverage. If the fish comes up to the surface and starts shaking its head and you let it shake its head, you're going to let that bait shake right out of its face. Those hooks are going to fly free.
Right.
Once you finally hook, you will hook up to a fish. If you stay consistent with this and you put in the time, you inevitably will hook up with the fish. It's just going to happen. When you hook up with that fish, do not let it play. Ski that thing to the shoreline or to the boat. Like it's a skier. Get that thing up on the surface and just keep winding. Or if it's a big one, just keep winding. Do not let that fish have any slacker play. Unless you're talking about a giant striper. That's a little different. But as far as largemouth, you got to get these things in to where you're at. If you give them any play at all, you're going to lose that fish.
There you go. It's a good tip.
Yep.
Ski them in.
Yep.
That takes us up to Tackle Time. Tackle Time sponsored by Pico Lures. Pico Lures has a complete line of hard and soft baits, so you can check them out there. I'm saying you can catch all kinds of game fish, but they got the stuff going, and it's spring, and the fish are biting. It's good. So if they want to check out your baits,
yes,
maybe buy a couple or buy one, and where would they go?
So we advertise on social media, on Facebook and Instagram pretty heavily. That's our main advertisement, and then we do have a website. It's kgbswimbaits.com.
All right.
Again, our inventory, a lot of times if you go to the website, there's nothing there because we sell out very quickly based on just how many we can produce and the demand.
Right.
But we do always advertise when baits are going on the website, and you can keep track on social media, and you'll eventually be able to get a bait.
All right. Sounds good. So like I always like to end the show, make sure you keep your swim bait hooks sharp and in the water.
Yep.